Welcome to Local Hits. I'm Ben Albert of the Rochester Business Connections Network. Local Hits is where I rebroadcast some of the absolute best podcasts from the region, full episodes in their entirety. This way, you can gain more value from other leaders in the community, other voices in the community. Today, we listen to part two of the Build Your Business Better podcast with Andrew Biernat. The episode is entitled From Collaboration to Personal Growth to the Darkness Inside of Us. If you listened to last week's Local Hit, you guessed it. I'm Andrew Biernat's guest on this episode. This is part two, round two of a two-parter that I recorded with Andrew. So check out last Sunday's Local Hits if you'd like to get started with that. I actually encourage it. And I encourage you to subscribe to the Rochester Business Connections Network if you haven't yet. And of course, when you're finished with that, check out the show notes and subscribe to the Build Your Business Better podcast with Andrew Biernat. Enjoy me and Andrew. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Build Your Business Better podcast, where we talk about the art and science of running a successful business. I'm your host, Andrew Biernat. What's going on, gang? I'm here with Ben Albert for round two. It was really funny. Last time we were chatting and Ben says, man, like we're getting close to the end of our time. Like, I feel like we just got started. And we were already like 35 minutes, almost 40 minutes into our chat, which is usually how long an episode is. But it felt like we left so many stones unturned and that there was so much more to explore. We just had to meet up again. So Ben, welcome back.
Thank you, Andrew. And that was my fault. I honestly thought it had been like 15 minutes and we ran out of time. Time just flew by. We recorded an episode of my podcast as well. So we spent 2 hours together and it felt like 45 minutes. So yeah. Compliment to you, my brother.
Same to you, my friend. Like it was a blast. It flew by. And I think that's what's important too, is finding those people where you just really connect and you can share ideas and you can riff off each other. And those type of people, for those listening, find them, treasure them, and make sure you spend enough time with them because they're going to make you sharper and they're going to make your life more interesting. So let's touch on a couple topics. So I kind of went through and asked you a few questions of some more stuff that you wanted to talk about. And one of them was the, you put this in quotes, CAN system. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, so it was a secret until about 6 weeks ago. And about 7 weeks ago, I came up with it. So it's a brand new system. I did a presentation for the VidWheel Creator Network. They're actually out of Buffalo, but it's a network of content creators, videos, podcasts. But VidWheel, it's basically all centered around video. So the first time ever I talked about it publicly, but it's an idea I've been whirling around in my head. And the CAN system, what a terrible introduction. Hey, this is brand new. I haven't taught it, but really it's like, for me, it's a hidden gem, right? And CAN stands for, C is interchangeable with a lot of different C's, but create, content, collaborate, and network. Basically create and network simultaneously. We talked about this a little bit in the previous episode. A lot of people go into networking events just with a bunch of business cards and some small talk. I like content creation and collaboration to be the purpose of my networking. And when I network with the purpose of creating content, we do what we're doing. We build better relationships. We gain more momentum for both of our audiences. We get to learn from each other. You can network with someone who's maybe a step ahead of you and learn from them and impress your audience. Or you could even create content and network with, you know, hidden secret, target members of your audience. So let's say you're a real estate agent and you're looking for a referral network of a gutter guy and someone for curb appeal and someone for house cleaning and someone for drone. You could start a podcast and talk to the drone guy, talk to the gutter guy, talk to the landscape curb appeal guy, and start building those referral networks by creating content and networking. So the CAN system, create content, collaborate, and network, creation is ultimately the purpose of your networking endeavors. A lot of times it's the first thing I open with. It's, hey, Andrew, I noticed blank, blank, and blank. You seem really interesting. I'd love to create some content with you. I'd love to have you on my show, so on and so forth. So I call it the CAN system.
Well, I think it's fantastic, right? And it speaks to why the two of us got into podcasting. For me, I enjoy creating, but I also enjoy meeting people. I enjoy, if I can double dip on both of those, okay. Right? If I can both meet interesting, cool people and also potentially meet business partners or potential clients, and I also get to build something and create something that's useful and digestible to my target market or to people that I care about, like, it's huge. That is so huge. And in a time-strapped society, in a difficult, difficult place where we're trying to do so, so much, it can be beneficial to everyone to be creating content while networking. Now, I guess, what are your recommendations for ways to create content and networking? Obviously, like this, podcasting is huge. What else can people do?
There's so many different ways. I mean, there's the podcast where you record the audio. It could be a video show. Again, you don't need a ton of editing skills. You can just record a conversation, take a bit and piece of it or the whole thing and post that. Or let's say, for example, you have a blog or you're creating any kind of journalistic content. I could reach out to Andrew or any business owner and ask them for a quote. So Andrew could provide a quote based on, you know, business strategy. I can utilize his quote, one, to make my content better, and two, to give me some momentum, give me something to talk about. So, you know, Andrew contributes a quote. Maybe I'm a graphic designer. I could contribute an infographic to Andrew's blog. There's a million ways where ultimately you can collaborate. And even if it's just getting a quote from Andrew, suddenly he's on my website. We got to build that relationship together. A little SEO strategy. He gets a backlink. So he gets a link to his website from mine. So we're providing mutual value there. So blogging, let's say you're a photographer. I could do this all day. Let's say you're a photographer and you're trying to build a portfolio. You could go into restaurants and take photos of their meals and their cooking for free. And in doing so, they're going to share that photo. It's going to get a lot of likes because their food's great. And then they can tag you on Instagram and tag traffic back to you. Then when you're looking for a big deal client, you can say, look at these photos I took for this restaurant, this restaurant, this restaurant. And I thought you'd be interested in working with me too. Suddenly something you did for free in a collaboration sense is something that you can provide value to and actually sell. And it's all that collaboration. It's not, hey, I love your food. It's, hey, I want to take pictures of your food. And so on and so forth.
It's funny. I was talking to a restaurant owner that stops in once in a while, and he was just kind of, I don't want to say complaining, but he was struggling a little bit in the sense of, you know, in high school, he was just kind of like a regular dude, whatever, you know, kind of nobody knew him. And then now that he owns a restaurant, all of a sudden everybody wants to be his best friend. Everybody's trying to hit him up for free stuff. And like, He was just like, just so frustrated by it. You know what I mean? Just people trying to take, you know? And it's like, you know, your event comes up every year, you know, and you always try and ask me for stuff. And then the rest of the year, you never talk to me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not on your radar. You don't stop by my restaurant. You know, like what kind of relationship is that? You know? And so I think what you're talking about here is fantastic, because instead of saying, hey, I want to take from you, or hey, I need you to help me with something, you can come in and say, hey, I want to provide value. Hey, I want to connect with you in such a way where we can both benefit. Instead of me just getting a free meal and giving that away to somebody, you know, now all of a sudden I can actually provide something that's useful to you that can help enhance your business, where I can also benefit through that giving and through that collaboration. So Ben, I think that's fantastic. So are you kind of formalizing this process at all? Are you turning this into something, or is this just kind of just a general idea you're trying to put out there?
It's a general idea that I'm going to formalize. I want it to be a system, whether it's an ebook or a video series. I really want to empower. I see like very young entrepreneurs, like in college, new town or just hit the workforce, trying to figure out where to go. I see very young people that are driven with lots of opportunity as the best market to utilize some of these new modern virtual systems and kick butt. Like, in a perfect world, in my opinion, there's a Rochester Business Connections. I want there to be an Austin Business Connections, a Nashville, a Los Angeles, a Buffalo, a Syracuse, a Finger Lakes. This is a replicatable model, and it's really all based around the CAN system, creating a networking where you can walk into a town where you don't know anybody, but if you have what you just said, Andrew, that value-first attitude and that collaborative we-both-win mindset, and you are deliberate in this endeavors, you can come to a town that you're brand new, you're just in college, and really, really, really make noise quickly. So I see a lot of potential for this system, but we could brainstorm now. I'm going to continue to think about it. I want to build an ebook, a course, and just a framework that people can be utilizing this anywhere in the Tokyo Business Connections. This works anywhere that collaboration is a beneficial thing.
Yeah. And this is actually something we've talked about too, is the idea of collaborating in bigger ways too, right? Talking about making an ebook or an actual physical book or creating other useful resources in that type of way. So for me personally, I love writing. I love creating in that way. I've self-published 2 books and I want to self-publish 10 more. I've got like that many more, just kind of ticking in the back of my mind. And so for me, it's like, I hear that and I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. You know what I mean? So speaking in collaboration terms, right? Looking at, okay, for a book like that, that's based around collaboration, that's based around teaching those principles, right? Do you bring in a couple other people who do those same type of things as armchair quote experts or people that are actually kind of living that, you know what I mean, to co-author it or at least have a chapter or, you know, have insights to add to the book, right? So I think that would be fantastic. You can even use that for you as a tool to use your own CAN system in creating the CAN system book. You know what I mean? You can go out and then interview people that are doing similar things. You can find people that are already using that system, either locally or nationally. And then you can kind of quote them or have them do a chapter or have them do a section or whatever. What are your thoughts? What's going through your mind on that?
I think it's a brilliant idea. I think step one is maybe an ebook or something, you know, smaller form, a workshop, a training exercise, low ticket or free, get people in just to try it and then build those case studies, because those case studies can be utilized for something longer form like a book. Because a photographer is going to utilize content and networking far different than a podcaster is. Graphic designer, again, creating infographics. You could be a t-shirt. You could be a t-shirt designer and take quotes from people. I mean, I think everybody would find different ways to utilize it. So I think that's a great idea to have collaborators maybe bring case studies to the table. I'm curious, were you the one who recommended Who Not How?
No, I didn't. Actually, it's on my book to read list. I haven't read that yet.
I was thinking that you were the one who recommended it, because I started reading it like right after we met. I think it was just by chance, but and I'm not done with it. But ultimately, the writer and his names, we'll put in the show notes if we have to. His name is, I can't remember it right now. He basically, all right, so the main guy who created the concepts hired someone to write the book for him. He said, you know this stuff just as well as I do. You've been studying with me for this long. You've read all my material. I think you're a better writer than me. Write the book that I would write if I was as good of a writer as you. So he created the concept and then he hired somebody to write the book. Like, talk about taking it to a whole new level. Who Not How is basically a book written by someone else for the person who created the concept, because he's like, if I'm going to do Who Not How, who I know, not how I might as well put it into practice. So
yeah, I just looked it up. One. Dan Sullivan.
Dan Sullivan. That's what it is.
That's fantastic too. Well, and we could talk a little bit more about that. The idea of staying in your lane is, I know that there's some things that I'm good at and some things I'm okay at and a lot of stuff that I'm really, really bad at. And for a long time, I used to try and like, oh, I got to make my weaknesses better. You know, I got to do this, I got to do that, you know. And over time, what I found is, honestly, I'm probably just better off hiring out certain things to other people who are really good at it. And then spending my time on the stuff that I am really good at and finding out what those things are that I need to hire out and making sure that I can earn that back and hopefully then some is going to be, I think, for many business people, how you can scale. Otherwise, you're going to be doing everything all the time and you're not going to be doing any of it very well. Mm-hmm. And so I found for me, when it comes to like book creation, I hire out the cover, I hire out the editing, I hire out proofreading, right? All these things other people are way better at. And it saves me a ton of time to just have somebody else do it. And it's going to look better. It's going to read better. It's going to come out better. And so whether it's your content that you're creating or whether it's your finished product at the end of the day, coming up with other people who can slot into the things that you're not as good at are going to be huge for delivering a superior product. I guess, Ben, do you use anybody in your business right now to do things that maybe you're not as good at?
Let me first tell you that you don't have to read Who Not How, because you basically just, you just summarize the book. It's all about finding the right who's. I have a part-time graphic designer I'm working with. I have a part-time IT guy, because when I'm building websites, there's certain coding and issues that it's exhausting and it takes a specialist to understand. So I'm willing to hire a freelancer, and I'm still trying to build that network of freelancers to, you know, better myself and my company. I mean, I'm partnered with a magazine so we can offer print advertising to my clients. I'm partnered with a videographer, so if someone needs video, they can go in and do some of the video and some of the editing at a higher scale. Now, these aren't people that I work with every single day, but I know that having them in my corner ready to kick butt for myself and my clients is great, even if we only utilize them once a year. I mean, I just had a conversation with someone who does like radio ads, and he does awesome like radio ads. He does the voiceover, the sound effects, everything. And I might not need him today, but having him in my corner, even if it's just giving the recommendation, it's not my company's concern. Just having these people to recommend in your network is so valuable no matter what you do. I mean, I'm in marketing, but no matter what you do, having these who's in your network that you're the guy that people ask for advice because they know that you have a who that can help them out. Oh my God, it works wonders.
Yeah, and that brings up a really cool concept that I had never heard of until a couple of years ago. But once, it's one of those things where once you hear about it, you see it everywhere and you're like, oh, yes. Duh, that's what that is, right? And so the idea was the value ladder, and it is providing different price points or different options to your customers, okay? And there's certain things that you're going to do really well at that you can, you know, slot into. For example, fitness business is a really good example, right? So, you know, your main bread and butter on that value ladder may be that, okay, I help people get in shape and lose weight. Okay. However, there's other things in that process that they're going to be looking for, right? They may be looking for extra flexibility type stuff. They may be looking for cardio classes on the weekend that you don't offer. They may be looking for a dietitian or a chiropractor or a massage therapist. They're looking for these other ways to help their bodies. They may be looking for like a naturopathic doctor or any of these different things where it's like, that's kind of outside your lane. You know what I mean? You shouldn't be recommending pills or potions or this other stuff as a personal trainer, at least in my opinion. There should be another expert that can be the one to do that. So what you can do is you can then build this kind of referral type network, and some of that can be formalized and some of that can be informal, right? And so the informal ones, you just like, hey, here's this person, can you help them? You know, and then they do the same for you. And then to formalize it, you say, hey, you know, me and this physical therapist, you know, we have a business relationship, and they either give me a cut or a percentage or a flat rate of people that I refer to them, right? So whatever you can do to A, help your customer. At the end of the day, that's what's most important. And that's where I struggle with certain organizations like BNI and other ones that kind of lock you into having certain people you refer to, because they may not be the best ones. They may not be the ones that really vibe with your customer. They may not be the ones you feel like are the best to serve. And so I feel like being independent enough and resourceful enough to find those type of people that make a good referral network help you build out what's called the value ladder. So you can kind of have all these different price points and different offerings for people, but you don't need to supply every single one of them, right? So in marketing, kind of like Ben is, you know, you don't have to do every single thing in marketing because goodness gracious, there's so much. There's SEO, there is building a website, there is writing copy, there is building funnels, there is setting, there, I mean, there's so much you can do within the marketing sphere in a digital space, in a physical space. It's too much for any one person to be great at. And so being able to find your lane, absolutely rock it, is going to be, I think, what most people's key to success is. Now, talk to me a little bit about generalist versus specialist. What do you feel like works? Because a lot of people, when they get started with stuff, they're kind of like a generalist, right? When I started in training, I kind of worked with whoever walked in the door. You know, whoever was there, I was there to train you, right? And I imagine many business people are the same way. Ben, have you made a transition from, you know, kind of generalist to being more specific, or do you tend to work with whoever you need to?
So they both work. Tiger Woods, total specialist, learned golf from a very young age. Roger Federer, the tennis player, was a generalist. And I only know this because I'm currently reading the book Range.
Oh, it's a great book.
It's Range, How Generalists Thrive in a Specialized World.
Yes, I love that book.
And my understanding, they have countless stories, like tens, if not over 100 stories about generalists versus specialists. And being a specialist is good and valuable in a lot of scenarios. If you are a surgeon, you must be a specialist. But if you're part of a leadership team, maybe you're a CEO and you have to have your hands in a lot of different cookie jars and you have to learn a lot of different things, being a generalist is very valuable because you can see the big picture, maybe not as refined, but you can see the big picture in a different light than a specialist. So they're both good. They're both necessary. I am not a specialist at any individual thing. I guess you could say the podcasting, networking realm maybe is a specialty, but I look at things holistically. I look at the big picture. And like you said earlier, I know when to make a recommendation rather than assert, like, rather the not even make the recommendation, recommend a person to make the recommendation rather than ultimately asserting that I know exactly what the right way is. So if you wanted to do TikTok advertising, I'd stop immediately and find a specialist to help you with that. But if you want to look at a holistic strategy, okay, we don't want to just work our left arm all day. Forget our right arm and our legs. We want to be on social media. We need to figure out what location's best for us. We need a website. We need it to be optimized. We need a Google presence. I will handle all that. But if you need complicated pay-per-click, if you need specialized, again, TikTok, social media, that's when a specialist comes into play. And I think the biggest tip here is I'm not a specialist. I'm okay with that. I'm more of a generalist. Businesses need to look at both. If they're looking for a pay-per-click campaign for a new book that they just launched and they have a landing page and the only way to funnel in traffic is through audience that isn't currently in their network, they don't have an email list, it's brand new, they're going to want to pay a pay-per-click specialist to handle that for them. But if someone's looking to build a business long-term with a strong foundation, they're going to need to follow generalist principles, or else the specialists will just put all their money budgeted into one sector and then other parts of the body. Again, you're working the left arm, but not the right arm or the legs because you're focusing just on TikTok, but not on LinkedIn, Google, website, SEO, anything like that. So there's a place for both. I'm the generalist in most people's lives. And I know when I don't have the answer and I kind of have to defer to a specialist at very refined, you know, refined tasks or refined skills.
No, I think that's, I think people who are able to defer and refer are some of the most mature people. They have a firm understanding of where they are. They know where the line is, and they know when they start getting close to that line that, like, that is where you run into customer dissatisfaction. That's where you run into refunds. That's where you run into business reputation, right? All the best people that I know are comfortable referring when it's outside their wheelhouse. And that was tough for me as a personal trainer coming up, was getting to a point where, okay, I don't have to know everything. Okay. As someone's talking to me about their shoulder surgery, you know what I mean? I don't need to know every single little tiny thing that happened during the surgery to get them to where they are. I don't even necessarily have to know every single PT exercise that they did during their physical therapy. What I need to know is how some of those PT exercises now can carry over into the personal training that they want to do, you know, now that we're 6 months post-surgery, right? Because that's where I fit. That's my spot. I don't need to know as much as a physical therapist. I don't need to know as much as the surgeon, right? But what I do need to know is some of the basic principles that work for that personal training sphere where I am the expert, where I am the primary person. And so it sounds like you are a specialist in a generalist way, right? You have specialized in big picture marketing. You have specialized in total brand management, all that type of stuff, where you can help someone build a platform, build their website, get them to a point where they have brand strategy, where they have a way of bringing new customers in, and they have a way to funnel their marketing dollars in ways that are going to benefit their business in the long term. And so in a sense, you've, quote, specialized, but you're special in that you are also a generalist. And it's awesome that you brought that book up, because I read that, man, probably about 6 or 8 months ago. And same thing. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. You know, like, I love it, because the past 10 years, it's been specialized. Even when I was in high school, it was go get a STEM degree. You know what I mean? Go something science, something tech, something, you know, and really burrow into it. You know, if you're going to go into business, be an accountant. If you're going to go into law school, get a particular type of law specialization, you know, look at a certain type of law. And it's really important to have that. However, I think in the short term, you may see stronger profits or you may see a better paycheck. I think in the long term, you miss out on some of the big picture stuff, because people look to big picture people for big decisions. They look to those big thinkers, those well-connected people, those people who have that understanding to help them through some of the most important and the most challenging things, for better or for worse. That's why we look to the president in times of challenge. Okay. In New York State, where we live, you know, the Governor Cuomo was a big deal in that he provided more of that generalist knowledge. He was not a doctor. He was not a, you know, pandemic specialist. However, he was a leader. He had his hands in a lot of places, and sounds like a lot of places maybe they shouldn't have been. However,
took me a second on that one.
But he also was able to kind of translate some of that to a layman's term, you know what I mean? To people to help them understand, right? And who got a lot of that credit, right? Not as many of the individual doctors that are sharing that advice, but those frontline leaders who are making that deeper impact.
I've got a quick comment on that, because, yeah, I mean, we talk about COVID, we talk about the pandemic, we talk about the protests, and there's no handbook on the best way to resolve this issue. Mm-hmm. It takes breadth of knowledge, it takes patience, it takes a general depth of knowledge to try to make the most educated decision possible. Yep. There is a handbook and a ton of people that'll train you to be world-class at chess, especially if you start at the age of 5. Yeah. You can become a grandmaster at chess if you put in 10, 15 years. There's a handbook for chess. Mm-hmm. There isn't a handbook for making leadership decisions under a pandemic that we've never faced before. Yep. So it does take that breadth of knowledge, and it's not easy. I mean, I don't think we have any of this figured out completely yet.
Well, I think you touched on it really well too, is, you know, there's no, quote, necessarily one handbook. There's no one way to do it. But right. One of the best ways is to know your limits, right? Know where sure. You don't know what's going on. Know where your knowledge gets you, but also know when you need to bring in a specialist. Be humble enough. And that's really a big piece, is being humble enough to say, you know what? this is where we're going to bring in somebody else. I'm going to kind of elevate them in a sense, right? And for us, it may mean a referral, right? You're elevating someone in that way. But, you know, in other leadership positions, it may be bringing in an expert to give a talk or to share the necessary information, right? It's why the CEO probably shouldn't also be doing the books, right? You should maybe have a CFO, right? Have someone who's specialized a little bit more in that financial piece that can then communicate better to the broader strategy people. So, exactly. Makes the dream work, man. And even and even as solopreneurs, even as people in smaller businesses, right? You can still build a team, right? You can hire out some of the work that you need done or form partnerships around some of the work you need done, trade services with people who you feel like you can mutually benefit each other. So let's dive in a little bit more on the personal development side. Because I know for both you and I, this is something that has really been life-changing for both of us, just how we have looked at ourselves, had those hard looks in the mirror, and decided that things have needed to change. Talk me through a little bit of your kind of personal development journey. What's changed in your life?
It's so open-ended that I could probably write a dissertation on this one. But at the end of the day, if I'm not healthy and I'm not if I'm not happy, if I'm not helping, if the people around me aren't made better from my presence, if I'm a drain on the world, if I'm sucking life out of the world, what's the point? I know it's depressing. I know it's frustrating to think about, but personal development isn't everything that I do. If I don't work on myself, I'm not going to be the man, the person, the servant I need to be there for my family, for my friends, for my clients. I can have more income, but I'm not going to utilize that income properly. It's not going to bring me joy. I believe that money, for example, gives you tremendous opportunity, but it doesn't make you happier. So if I obtain more money, it's not going to make me happier. It's only going to give me more opportunity to be depressed if I'm not taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. And this is coming from someone who didn't speak basically the first 12 years of his life, was bullied, was really good at basketball, but was way too short and ended up getting his ass beat long term. And someone that ultimately has dealt with alcoholism and has a father that passed away due to alcoholism. And has had a lot of sadness in my life. And this is not an excuse. I mean, I feel better and I've grown stronger than I've ever been. And my sadness to never being happier stories, never to impress anyone. It's just to impress upon people that the person they used to be doesn't have to be the person they are now. So personal development, again, you opened up a whole can of worms. It's in everything I do because I'm focused on the moment, on the actions necessary to win the day, on the best way to better myself, better my family, better my community, better my clients, be of service. I'm focusing on that every single day. And I'm focusing on winning that task every single day. And we talked about this in the last episode, right? Me not having a great 3 to 5 year plan. I know that if I win my daily plan, it doesn't even matter at the end of the day. Like, I know that I will be happy in 3 years if I win my daily plan. I could be a cheerleader. I could be a nurse. I could be a rock star. If I'm winning every day through personal development, through working on myself, through helping others, through serving the community, through serving a higher power, it really doesn't matter. Like, I'm in the marketing industry. That's inconsequential. It's just so important to me. And I know that's super vague. We can dissect it a little bit. But any general thoughts? And I kind of want to hear a little bit from you, Andrew, on your journey.
Yeah. So, man, ours is very similar. Actually, one of my darkest times in my life was when I was on unemployment. And, you know, leading up to that, I hated my job. I was doing work that I thought was bad. Like I felt like the work I did hurt people in the end of the day, right? And that just made me feel pretty rotten, right? And so, you know, alcohol was one of the things that I leaned into as well. You know, and I got to the point where I was, you know, getting blackout drunk multiple times per week. You know, sometimes even on weekdays, and then just kind of waking up, collecting myself and trying to go back to work, you know? And it's just like, it was just an awful way to live. I was always anxious. I was always depressed, right? And anxious being afraid about the future, depressed being sad or troubled with the past, right? And so I was never actually present, right? I was always somewhere else. And, you know, eventually I was laid off from that job for good reason. and I just got into this kind of downward spiral. And you know, that's kind of started some of my healing and personal growth journey. Eventually, I was able to get a better job where I felt like I was doing work that mattered. That was actually personal training. And I started seeing a counselor. I started going to church. I ended up, my counselor challenged me. He said, just stop drinking for a little while. You know, just give it like 3 months. Stop drinking for 3 months and just see how you feel, you know, and see who's in charge. You know what I mean? Yeah. And when you put it that way, I'm like, I'm in charge. I'm the boss. I'm the boss.
Don't challenge me.
Right. But like at first I was like, nah, whatever. Right. And then I had this, you know, epic hangover one day and I'm like, this is the worst feeling I've ever had in my entire life. Right. I'll try it. You know what I mean? I feel so horrible right now. I'll try. I happen to actually have a copy of Alcoholics Anonymous book right on my bookshelf right next to my bed. And I just picked it up and I started like leafing through it. You know, I got like 80 pages just laying there, you know, munching on a cracker, you know, like I just horrible, horrible day. But that was the start of something different. You know, that was, you know, September 1st, 6 years ago. And, you know, I gave it 3 months. I was like, yeah, I'll try it. You know, I'll try going 3 months without. You know, at the end of a month, didn't really notice anything. End of 2 months, I was like, all right, I'm starting to jive a little bit, you know? And at the end of 3 months, I'm like, man, I've never been happier. I've never felt more successful at work. I've never felt better physically and mentally. I never realized that, you know, alcohol for me personally had effects outside of just that day and that next day, right? Mm-hmm. It affected me for days, weeks, months, right? It had an impact on my life. And I started seeing life a little bit differently after I got married. My wife and I were very fortunate. We had our first daughter, and then we had 3 miscarriages in a row. And this is very much in like my personal growth, rah, rah, rah. I'm reading books. I'm going to conferences. I'm super excited, you know? And then I go through and we have a miscarriage and it's like, oh, it was brutal. So hard. And then we had another miscarriage. And that one was actually the most surprising because I was like, okay, you know, bad things happen to good people, you know? Right. But then it's just like, boom, 2 bad things. Right. And then we had a 3rd miscarriage and I was just like, it just rocked me. Right. And I'm fortunate, you know, I didn't lean back into alcohol or a lot of my other negative habits that had gotten me down in the first place. But it also started me thinking along the lines of what is personal growth? Some of the wisest people that I've gotten to meet aren't necessarily the ones that have had the rosiest lives. They're not necessarily the people that have been like, oh yeah, I had everything handed to me. It was great. Life was good. It's been a cool little ride. It's been nice and smooth. You know, the people that I really enjoy being around, those people that seem like they have depth and wisdom and calm and peace about them, those people almost inevitably have some of the most trauma and most difficult life situations that they've been through. And that really kind of sparked me as far as personal growth, because, you know, I thought of it as the Tony Robbins type personal growth, you know, where it's like, well, it's exciting. Like we're growing, we're better, you know? Yeah, let's play. Exactly. You know? And that's what personal growth was to me for a long time, you know, many years. And then going through those miscarriages, it kind of highlighted the fact that now personal growth can kind of be awful also, you know? And so for me, I see personal growth as 2 things. One is the personal choice for change that you make. And the other is the change that comes and finds you, right? There's those changes that come into your life that you weren't looking for. A family member passing away, going through miscarriage, a car accident that absolutely wrecks your body, whatever, right? These hardships that come into your life that you didn't ask for, you didn't want, and you wouldn't ask for again. But they're there and they happened. And then it's picking up and figuring out what to do after that. I think both of those pieces, the I'm excited and I'm reading and I'm growing, and the this is really hard and I hate this, but I'm going to get through it. Both of those to me represent kind of the full spectrum of personal growth. What do you think?
I just want to commend you for being vulnerable and sharing this story. I don't know if you feel this way, but one mantra I've been living by is life happens for you, not to you. And these traumatic experiences that we've, most of us have been through in different levels and different ways of our life, can actually be a blessing to teach us and make us stronger and make us show up better in the future. And I mean, you tell me, it saddens me to hear that story, but it's optimistic to see how well you're doing and how, man, any further thoughts? Blessings to you, brother.
Yeah, dude. So, and, you know, I look at the flip side too, you know what I mean? You struggling with alcohol and knowing that your dad struggled with alcohol and ultimately, you know, was kind of the cause of his passing. Like, you know, that's hard. And I can look back in my family tree and, you know, my father's parents and my mom's dad, you know, both of them struggled with alcohol and, you know, the way that they lived their lives led to an earlier passing, you know, in a way that I really, my dad's dad, I never met him. He had passed away while my dad was in college, you know? So like, I never got to meet that depth of family, you know what I mean? And because of the way he lived, he passed down dysfunction into his family, you know what I mean? And fortunately, you know, my dad was very conscious of that dysfunction and he worked at it. But again, some of that, you know, carries down, you know, there's like a, I think in the Bible, you know, some that says the sins of the father will carry down for, you know, seven generations. And I think in some ways that's so true, because when really bad stuff, when really bad darkness happens and it doesn't get fixed, like those after effects just ripple down and down and down. But, you know, even if you don't have kids, they can ripple out and out and out. And so, you know, this is, you know, we started talking business, we've gone into personal growth, and now we're, you know, we're talking about, you know, the negative effects of our lives having a ripple effect on the universe. But truly, when we can address the darkness in ourselves, and we can search out the light that's out there and in others, you know, and we can let that light in and we can let that darkness out, you know, we're all going to be better for it. There's no doubt about that.
I'm with you, brother.
Dude. So, all right, let's work on wrapping up, because this was a wide ranging interview.
Yes.
And it was honestly one of the more fun ones that I've ever had. I guess, Ben, looking at everything that we've talked about today, whether it be personal growth or business or marketing or any of that other stuff, is there anything that you want to leave the audience with today?
Yeah, I would just let everyone know to be the best person you can today, tonight. I mean, the moment you're listening to this, flip the script if you're having a bad day and turn it into a good one. I know it's not that simple. I'm making it sound simple, but a good recommendation I'd give is The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. Mm-hmm. Again, The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. And to go the fastest version ever, he has an acronym, SAVERS, and it stands for Silence, Affirmations, Visualization, Exercise, Reading, and Scribing. And ultimately, every morning, having a moment of silence, maybe looking in a mirror and letting yourself know that you're okay and you're not your past and you're good enough now and you're only getting better. Visualizing your day, visualizing your future, exercising, getting the blood flowing, reading something that's going to inspire you and help you grow. Scribing, and scribing is basically writing. I keep a gratitude journal because I like to pay attention to the things that I am thankful for. And the things I add is I've got my medicinal routine. I got my vitamins. I chug a glass of water every morning. And I try to reach out, and I've been failing, but I try to reach out to one new person a day just to offer a hand if I know they're going through something, offer a compliment, offer a referral. But really having this start your day, again, this is adapted completely from Hal Elrod, Miracle Morning, but having a morning routine of any kind that works for you, that gets you inspired and motivated, is going to make you a better husband, a better wife, a better father, mother, a better employee, a better business owner, a better person. And, you know, Andrew and I talked about some of the frustrations or traumas we've went through. You've went through your own. Any listener has went through their own. And having a system of optimism and personal growth, again, man, I don't know what your morning routine looks like. takes me 20 to 30 minutes every morning, and it's the biggest win of the day. It's the first thing I do.
Yeah. So it's actually funny you mentioned that. So I, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, got into that routine. Since having kids, I'm a little bit out of it.
That's what everyone says when I talk to them about
Because it's like
routines.
It's hard. It's difficult to have it set up just right. Right. But I try and keep a lot of those elements present. Right. I try and keep time where I can either type out my thoughts or share my thoughts. I try and keep some time where I'm exercising, some time where I am, you know, getting opportunities to say nice things about myself, you know, looking into my future, like where are things headed? Where am I going? How are my kids doing? How can I help them? You know, and trying to hit on every single one of those elements, maybe not necessarily consciously, but I noticed that when more of those things are present, I tend to have better days. And I notice when more of those things are absent, I tend to be more depressed or more anxious or more blah. I tend to not be as motivated and not be as excited, right? I try and bring in new exciting information, right? With either my eyes or my ears. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, yeah, absolutely right. I think the Sabres routine is fantastic.
Two second tip. It doesn't have to just happen in the morning.
Oh yeah.
But if you can get a little reading, a little exercise, a little visualization, a little writing, if you can get this all done throughout the day, that's still a big win as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah. 100%. All right. So we'll cap the episode there, friends. So we talked about three different books today, right? So that was The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. We talked about, what was that first book we mentioned? Who, Not How. That's Dan Sullivan, right? And sounds then there was one Range. In the middle. Range. Do you remember who that was by?
I do not either.
Which one's on my tongue? Can't remember. But Range, that one's a really good one. You type in Range book, I'm sure you'll get it.
How generalists excel in a specialized world or something like that.
That one's another fantastic book, friends. So those looking to grow, that can be a great spot to start. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Build Your Business Better podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell so you'll be notified every Thursday when a new episode drops.